Three Roman Figure. Brothers Friends Parody. What Marx wanted, and with him all the sensualist communists, Babeuf, Owen, Fourier, is also what we want. But none of them took the necessary steps to achieve what they wanted. Brother, as far as materialism, economics, and equality are concerned, we need to draw from the kindred inheritance rather than from the bourgeois one. In short, Marx wasn't Jewish enough, and the others all the more reason. When we speak of free partners, we cannot satisfy ourselves with the hybridist, rational, or legal meaning of the word partner. We must see him bluntly as a brother, the requisite complement to a friend. And this takes us far. Kindred materialism compels us to thoroughly revise, following economics, our approach to nature. Mathematics, physics, engineering. It holds all together. As for community, we have to take into account matriarchy, customs, orality. And when it comes to thought, propitiation in front of reason and symbolism in front of logic. Marx denounces the surplus values extorted from the wage slave, but he ignores that this status had been absolutely civilizing, and also that barbarian parasitism made it disappear, turning ex-wage earners into a mob considered to be a social misfit, a potential enemy within, which only deserves, at best, a biological short ration. Marx emphasizes periodical depressions of overproduction of things and persons, which condemn the ruling regime. But the first of such slumps, that of 1825, was provoked by England, sworn enemy of 1789, under the Holy Alliance with the peoples on their last knee, heavily betokening the barbarian turn around of 1835. Marx takes into account, without thinking about it, barbarism which has substituted itself for civilization, but only to discredit utopian socialism, philanthropy, and to side with the Chartists in favor of physical force, of Haney and others, as opposed to moral force. Thus, he decrees that violence is the midwife of history and foreshadows the revolution of the Fourth Estate following that of the Third Estate. We are still here, within a civilized context, with an a priori pion to civil war added on. A theme which was out of place with the orthodox bourgeoisie. Besides, the revolution isn't a criterion of social promotion per se. As far as the soul destruction of the commanding caste is concerned, let us stick to the word of La Boétie. Forsake the system to see it collapse under its own weight through lack of popular support. And the commanding barbarians alone will have to bear the full responsibility for the bloodshed which they will force us to avenge. Marx says that depressions render economic planning necessary. Of course, and such planning must also be precisely imperative rather than merely indicative. But how can we imagine any planning strategy without brothers going into partnership and without the physics of quality? Besides, state parasitism already knows perfectly well how to plan, and in particular in wartime, requisitioning, rationing, and so on. It isn't without reason that Lenin held out the Prussian management of World War I as exemplary. Marx predicts a transitory period during which the rule, each according to their own work, must apply, until the socialist unleashing of productive forces provides such an abundance that the rule of each according to their own needs can then be adopted. Why take into consideration a state of absolute abundance? Prehistory has given us a productivity that is ample enough to immediately tune distribution according to the needs, with 3 hours a day of compulsory social service, an obligation that is easily mutually consented. If there are any reservations on the matter, these are the following. 1. To recover from the damages of war or of a natural disaster. 2. The rule according to the needs will become tougher in so far as the new responsibility of each person will become a second nature. I had previously substituted of each according to their own abilities of the lower stage of communism, according to the Stalinist handbook for of each according to the norm. This called for a logical mutual control in the course of the effective exertion of one's abilities. Note: did Marx apply to himself the rule of remuneration according to one's work? All we need is the disappearance of money, which regulates, don't laugh, the labor and wage markets. Saying farewell to money is, of course, a result of planning, which only allows us to work to order of useful goods and services, and to distribute a wealth that has first been made available. Public opinion knows very well what to think of the contributions of one another according to their abilities. Similarly, the community of life we belong to is fully qualified to deliver to its members according to their relative needs, distribution vouchers secured on the proven available wealth, goods and services. I can just see an assignate listed at 100 at the time of its emission, which renders the productivity for 1 hour of average social work in the year of emission. A chart recording the fluctuation in productivity allows to quote the values of vouchers as a means of legal tender according to their date of emission, as long as they haven't been withdrawn from circulation, and above all, as long as their regulation hasn't been spontaneous through the decrease of the duration of compulsory service. Assignate are nominal, just like our wages. They cannot be saved for anything other than consumption. Compare luncheon vouchers. The bank becomes an establishment of qualitative accountancy statistics. Armaments, money's partners in crime, will disappear too. This means, concretely, that armed professions, barbarism's soldier and pigs, are disbanded, and that there is nothing left but domestic safety taken charge of by civilians, armed if necessary. Prisons must be vacated immediately. Friend, our union managers are all in one the partners' friends, their principals, and their brothers. Title 13 of the Code Napoleon deals with principals, partners, giving mandates, power of attorney, to their proxies, union managers, authorized representatives, the disposal of which the former will have. The mandate, order in Latin, is a deed by which somebody gives someone else the right to act on behalf of him, the former willing it. Code and case law tell us, surprisingly, of how much the mandate is precious to our suitable community. Fancy that! This has nothing to do with wage labor, a contract of employment, venal, mercenary, and fundamentally leonine, of the laboring folk who take a commitment to work for a master, following the faith of the latter for their wage. Take note. The mandate is a deed, and only a contract a posteriori, idest, practically dispensed with formality. What is proper amongst trustworthy people? The mandate is essentially free, unless agreeing about an advantage. This is because The proxy renders a good turn to the principal, a shade with the wage earner's service. The principal puts his trust in the proxy, who has friendly feelings toward the principal. The word is let out. The proxy makes himself account for his management, but can compromise on his mission like an alter ego. The proxy can be dismissed, so much that being merely notified that a new proxy is constituted for the same concern is worth repeal the first mandate. On his side, the proxy can relinquish his mandate, so much that the good turn he wanted to render comes severely to his detriment. He doesn't even have to indemnify the principal for the injury that his renunciation may have harmed him. Let's admire how everything went with free people amidst masters, by contrast with the relations stemming from master-slaves contracts. Isn't this the proof that a mandate perfectly suits our union management as regards its friend face?